Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. I'm Phil Carroll, and today we're joined by Alex Walker, CEO of East Star Resources. Welcome back, Alex. It's been a while. How's life treating you in Kazakhstan?
It has been a while, gents. Thanks for having me. It's wonderful here. Thank you. We are nearing the end of winter. It's still a bit chilly, but the sun's out. The ice is thawed, and we're enjoying some time outside in the park and things like that. So it's really good. In fact, right now it's Nowruz, which is a public holiday for an old cultural New Year. And so it's a really nice time in Almaty and all around Kazakhstan and other regional centers. Lots of celebrations. So it's very nice.
Very good. So just today you announced an independent exploration target on the Vakuba copper zinc lead deposit on the Rudny Altai VMS belt in Kazakhstan. The exploration target comprises 19 to 23 million tons of ore with grades of 1 to 1.4% copper and 1 to 1.4% zinc, or 1.4 to 1.9% copper equivalent. The target is based on 97 drill holes comprising of 42,178 meters of historical diamond drilling, and there's potential for further tonnage in some of the ore bodies. The company plans to upgrade the exploration target to JORC compliant resources, with verification and infill drilling expected to start in the summer of 2023. The deposit is within a 30 square kilometer ore district with multiple drill ready targets and excess processing capacity within the region from both Glencore and Kaz Minerals may allow for fast track production with low capital expenditure. Sounds like one hell of a find, Alex.
It is, Phil, and you've summarized it very well. Thank you. Let me know if you need a job at any point, mate. No, you're absolutely on point. We're over the moon. We've obviously been collecting data for years all across Kazakhstan, and in particular across the Rudny Altai belt and our 803 square kilometers of licenses. And the Vakuba deposit is one that has far more data on it than a lot of other areas that we've collected. And so this result's absolutely outstanding. You know, we've tried to be very, let's say, conservative with our approach. You know, we're not talking about targets until we're really sure that this is something we want to go after. And so 6 to 7 months worth of digitizing data, you know, georeferencing old maps, digitizing the data, putting it together, and then using AMC consultants, very well-regarded consultants out of Perth, to give us an independent. It started as a mineral resource estimate and now has moved to an exploration target using JORC reporting standards. Is a real win for us, and it's given us something to really, really sink our teeth into this year. You know, we think we've been fairly conservative, as I say, with our approach on this as well. So it's not even a global resource estimate that we've put out there, which would actually be, you know, considerably bigger. It's constrained by cutoff grades. You know, the open pit cutoff grade is 0.38% copper equivalent. And, you know, to come up with that cutoff grade, we've actually done, or AMC's done, back of the envelope modeling of optimized open pits and economics. So they've used data that we know quite intricately, operating costs in Kazakhstan, mining costs, processing costs, you know, standard dilution and the royalties of Kazakhstan and so on to come up with that cutoff grade. And then the underground as well is 0.886% copper equivalent. And so it's a target that we believe is very, very, very justifiable. And on top of that, our hope is that we can get a little bit of gold and silver in there as well. Certainly gold and silver comes very prominent in the region. The big VMS deposits that Kaz Minerals have, Artemyevsky, Ajisky, no longer operating, but Nikolovsky and so on, you know, they often come with 1 to 2 grams gold, sometimes over 100 grams silver. So this is a little bit lower grade than that, although hopefully some of our VMS targets won't be. But nonetheless, it's not incorporated in the 1.4 to 1.9% copper equivalent. So if the deposit does turn out to have payable grades of gold and silver, which we expect it to, you know, those grades will bump up again, and hopefully that tonnage will bump up too. So we certainly feel there's upside just within the Vakuba deposit alone, within this exploration target, and then, you know, as you mentioned, within the region as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at that historical drilling, you know, 42,000 meters, that's a lot of drilling. And in today's prices of, you know, say, taking a conservative figure, you're talking millions of dollars of money that's been already put into the ground. someone else has put that legwork in. And now you've got a lot of data for the geos to pour over, right? I mean, how encouraging, obviously, you've released some of the copper grades, but what sort of size of resource could we be talking about here?
Well, I mean, certainly I won't give any numbers outside of the exploration target. That's, you know, we're hoping to hit that the top end of that 19 to 23 million tons, and obviously the top end of that grade. But what I'll say is that's just this Vakuba deposit. So, you know, the presentation we released today gives an idea of just how small that is in comparison to our license package. You know, it's 2.9 square kilometers and a license package is 803 square kilometers. So it's a fraction of the whole area. The controlling geology of this Vakuba deposit is called the Loshen Formation. These are flat-lying, you know, sheet-like structures. And we know that formation is roughly 10 by 3 kilometers, 30 square kilometers within this Vakuba ore district. And we know that we've got EM targets within those formations, some priority one, some priority two targets. We hope we'll also be able to, you know, to extend that resource. So in terms of size, the only number that we can comfortably say today we're targeting is the Vakuba deposit, the one that we've put out. But geez, we wouldn't be here if we didn't think there was some serious upside and some new discoveries of new VMS deposits, both in very close proximity to the Vakuba deposit and again across the greater license area.
So Alex, yes, we should really be probably popping the champagne corks, but obviously the market has decided just to drink some water instead. So it's not great. But I mean, I posted on the group, you know, and I used the bottom figures that you were talking about, 19 million tons at 1.4%. is 266%, 266,000 tons of contained copper equivalent at 9,000 per ton is $2.4 billion. Do you think the market's actually got the message here? This is how much resource?
I mean, clearly not. I mean, certainly from a peer comparison basis, you know, we're trading at a substantial discount. You know, maybe there's some people out there that you know, want to see the drill results and the conversion. I think that's perfectly fair. We need to ask ourselves, you know, are you willing to wait? And how long is it going to take to make that conversion? What's the potential upside between then and now? And, you know, the numbers that we've put out have a peer comparison basis of $1.36, you know, per ton copper equivalent. We've used peers on the ASX, TSX. In fact, we've principally used peers that have higher grade projects. I think we use about a 0.8% copper equivalent cutoff for that. So, you know, it's really just the higher grade projects that have been incorporated there. And many of those are underground projects. So I think underground only. So if we took those out as well, the average would probably be considerably higher. But yeah, if we meet the high end of that exploration target, you know, and we do get that average, then that's a 7x valuation uplift for where we are today. So I certainly hope that that's something we'll be able to do. And I hope we'll be able to add more tons, you know, with exploration success as well.
Yeah.
Like you said, that, you know, the markets are a little bit dire at the moment. I don't feel that happy that my share price is outperforming that of Credit Suisse, but it's probably at least something we can say right now.
Yeah, I also then put a 60% cost on the market to actually get the stuff out the ground. So an all-in sustaining cost of 60%, which was probably very high, but that would give you an EBITDA of $957 million and over a 12-year mine life, maybe $80 million in effective cash flow to East Star. So I think people just simply haven't got it. You've got just over a 5 million market capitalization. You've got a discovery here. It's not or exploration. I just don't think the penny's dropped that you've actually got a discovery that you probably, you know, 90% chance you're going to mine this thing. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's there.
And let's talk about why we're in this district as well. Not even this part of the world. And obviously, you know, I think listeners to the show and people who follow the company know how much of an advocate of operating in Kazakhstan I am. But you know, part of the reason we're in the Rudnalta VMS belt is, yes, it's underexplored. Yes, it's very high grade. Yes, there are fantastic mines there, but the logistics are already in place. In our deposit, there's rail, power, water, roads, absolutely everything. So within our deposit, within our licenses, going through, you know, the whole area. We're 52 kilometers from Kaz Minerals concentrator by road. That's not by site. 52 kilometers by road from a concentrator that has, you know, quite a lot of excess capacity today. You know, the Kaz Inc. Concentrator on Lake Glencore also has excess capacity. That's 110 kilometers. And this is in a country where, you know, fuel prices are, I don't know today, but it's probably about between a fifth and an eighth of what they are in the UK. So, you know, trucking ore is never a particular issue in this area. Even the smelter is 70 kilometres just to the south of our licence in regional hub of Skamnegorsk. If we can prove the resource, you know, demonstrate the metallurgy, and by the way, to demonstrate the metallurgy, all we need to do is match the old results, because the historical recoveries for copper were up to 95% from pretty standard flotation from the Vakuba deposit and surrounding areas. So we don't even think that's a particularly large risk. If we can match all of that, then I think there's a real, if our market cap is still too small to build a, you know, a ginormous plant ourselves that would might be warranted for, based on the exploration success. Well, I think we have a low capex optionality here, which is ore sales to Kaz Minerals or Glencore. It's not like I've had that conversation, but they've got two mills that are underfed. They're buying ore from other people, you know, in the region. So, you know, why not us? So I really like that fact that we're here. It gives us a lot of optionality for, you know, for cash flow.
So just so people understand, if you have all the cash in the world, okay, which we obviously don't at this moment in time, but you certainly have enough cash to keep yourself going for a period of time from what we've discussed. But if you had enough cash, the scenario would be drill these holes, JORC report sort of end of this year, early 2024, is that fair to say? And then if you had all of the money, then basically you're going to go into a pre-feasibility study?
Yeah, that's right. So the thresholds for the various feasibility is if you drill out an inferred resource, you can do a scoping study, which is, depending on who you ask, but let's say it's plus or minus 40% economics, and then pre-feas is probably 20 to 30% plus or minus, and you need to do an indicated resource for that. So we've planned drilling for both conversion, JORC conversion, which would take us ultimately to inferred initially, and we've also planned the drilling for to move to indicated. So, you know, it's going to be subject to the results, subject to, you know, how much the market's appreciating the work that we do and so on, will depend on how that those exploration dollars get allocated. But, you know, there's no reason to think why we wouldn't just keep going and skip a scoping study and go straight to a PA. But at this stage, we're just planning it step by step. So drill the first JORC resource and get the scoping study done, and we hope to be able to do that this year.
And if all of those things were in line, and obviously the results have to show what you've seen already, you know, you talked about selling ore to Glencore or to Kaz Minerals. When could that possibly take place? Could that possibly take place in 2024, or are we too soon?
I would say that would be pushing it, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. No, this is what people want to know, though. What is the first revenue stream? Because I think there's no doubt your comments and what you said in the RNS even, that this is now priority number one to get us to revenue in Eastark. Would that be fair to say that?
That would be fair, yes.
So yeah, this is priority number one. Yeah, the rare earths could come back amazing, and that's another game. But ultimately, from a copper point of view, this is it. So can we safely say that, you know, if all things go to plan in terms of the results and the cash is available, that in 2025, Eastar will be revenue producing from copper?
I would say it's got the potential for that. You know, there's lots of different scenarios that can play out here. And it obviously depends on exploration success as well. If we're looking like we've got not 20 million tons, but, you know, 50 million tons because we, or, you know, north of that, if we've had exploration success, then the game changes a little bit and you become, generally, you probably stay an explorer for a while because hopefully the market's appreciating what you're doing. But what we want to do is we want to de-risk this to give us the optionality. So if we've got 5 to 6 million tons in an open pit at 1.5 to 2% copper, the metallurgy's good, you know, the mining's easy, then that's something that I could see us being able to do ore sales potentially within 2025. And that would involve moving through all the feasibility and permitting in 2024. So we'd be running very fast, but I wouldn't say it's out of the realm of possibility at all.
Okay, good. And I mean, obviously this whole area, again, I don't think people have got this actual like copper find. They haven't got it yet. But they also haven't got the fact that of the size and the potential of these other four or five targets that you've got. Because you could have four or five of the same of this, I presume, based on what the geophysics has shown you and also the helicopter ball and stuff that you've done. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. I mean, in fact, we're looking for, well, what would be great would be to find another Artemyevskiy or something along those lines, you know, 50 million tons at 1.9% copper, 6% zinc, 2% lead, 1.2 grams gold and 115 grams silver.
Now you're dreaming, Alex. Come on.
Yeah. So these are within kilometres of our licence area. You know, we've pegged the trend, you know, we pegged the cover, and we have EM anomalies. You know, if you draw a line between three mines that are all within kilometres of our licence area, and ours is the bit in between, you know, what those grades I've just stated, three of them, and we've got EM anomalies all along that trend, along the Ertish Fault. So there's three or four targets there. You know, there's other targets which have given us anomalies, you know, where we know there's old historical mines that ran at 3 or 4% copper. You know, what we don't know is, were they finished? The anomalies are nearby, so maybe they actually missed, maybe they mined the, you know, the stringer zones or the pipes, and they missed the principal ore body because there was a fault and it got cut off and it doesn't have a surface expression. You know, the reason we're here is because we think things were missed. And we can already point to quite a number of targets that we believe things are missed. And as soon as we've, you know, completely crunched all the historical data as much as we can, like we've already done with Fukuba, then we'll be talking about those targets as well, and we'll be hopefully converting them to drill ready. So that's across the whole rest of the license. If you just zoom in on the Fukuba ore district, yes, we have, obviously we've got our exploration target, we've got four drill ready EM targets. So they are, just to make everyone aware, when you fly a heli-borne EM survey, you obviously get hundreds or thousands of anomalies as we have. It's basically, it's a giant metal detector, but the parameters of a metal detector need to be as such that it's sufficiently constrained that you can model it. And so we've had four of those, and they're all within that 10 by 3 kilometer Bakuba ore district that are all were a priority one targets that have been able to be modeled. So that doesn't mean the other ones are a tier two. It just means they weren't as strong for potentially for particular reasons. So they'll be followed up in due course, but there are four that aren't drill ready. So I think we'll probably look at least three of those, hopefully drilling three of those this year as well. And, you know, that could be, I don't want to rest on those because now we have this fantastic exploration target. But if one of those comes in as well, then yeah, I mean, it should carry considerable grade and hopefully enough size to really give, you know, make this a standalone project. If it's not already, it would certainly do that.
So then that's a game changer to get a joint venture partner in to actually then carry all the costs, or not necessarily?
You know, it's always just subject to cost of capital, isn't it? The current valuation we've been given is such a discount, then certainly we'd, you know, I would happily entertain something along those lines, you know, and so it's just, it's something that a company always needs to weigh up as it progresses. If someone wants to come in and drill this out, and I think I said, you know, when we first started this venture, you know, before we had this level of detail, I have no issues whatsoever with that strategy, the Greenland Gold strategy, the Mariana Resources, you know, even Independence Group out of Australia. Mm. Now, and you know, $8 billion company started with that same strategy by farming out licenses to Anglo and ending up with 30% of Tropicana. So if that's a deal that we end up striking, I'm very happy to do that. We've got a lot of exploration ground we can get on with while someone helps convert this to, you know, to a development project. It just needs to be the right deal with the right partner.
Yeah. So moving on from the copper, the reason why I invested myself in Eastar, and I openly say I'm a shareholder in Eastar, is because of the rare earths. So how soon are we expecting the results and then subsequently the leaching that needs to take place to see if this is possible that we can basically get the rare earth out of this clay?
Sure. So I would say that I'm expecting the results very, very soon, imminently. And so hopefully we can process those in-house very, very quickly and then release those to the market very quickly as well. Once that has been done, then we will start the process of sending it for leach test work. We haven't done it sequent at the same time because we wanted to make sure we select the exact correct samples. So we didn't want to do that off the back of the yttrium XRF results. We wanted to do that off the back of the actual assays. So yeah, I really hope that we can update the market with that news in the very near future.
And again, just explain to people, you sort of have a dual exploration target as well from the past as well, I think.
Well, this is it.
That's expanded drastically because of the amount of depth and also the amount of area that you're now covering. But the, even this alone has got to be worth multi-million pounds to Easter.
You know, it's exactly right with regards to historical data. It's almost exactly the same position as the Vekoba deposit. We have all of the historical drill results. We have georectified them. We've done site visits and to give us a degree of confidence in the locations and so on. And there is an old GKZ resource on the rare earths. And that's the main difference. This one's an exploration target because it's our resource based on historical data, whereas the rare earths, we've published the original GKZ, which is Russia's JORC or 43101 modeling system. So their resource is just under 20,000 tons of contained rare earth oxide for that small part that's been drilled. And people want to reference our presentation from that, they can see what I'm referring to. So we have done, you know, 30 drill holes within that resource envelope with the intention of refining, confirming the historical grades and refining, you know, the widths of the intersections and getting an idea as to what layers contain what sort of grades of total rare earth oxides. And once we can demonstrate that, then we will commence, again, JORC resource drilling and the exploration upside. And as you've mentioned, Kevin, you know, we pegged an additional 130-odd square kilometres of the trend, if you want to call it that, of the...
How big is 130 square kilometres? Because I reckon it's probably the size of Wales or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't overlapped it in Wales. I could use my mapping now until I published something on LinkedIn a while ago where I pasted Kazakhstan over Europe and it's bigger than Western Europe. But I don't think 130 kilometers is quite that size, but it's big enough. It's big enough. What I'd say is that envelope of the GKZ resources is less than 10% of that ore trend, of the stuff that we've already pegged. And that's purely based on the granites, on the 1 to 50,000 scale map of the granites within that region. And so if indeed it continues, and I don't see why it won't, so if indeed it continues, then that would get a lot bigger as well.
Yeah, explain to people then the rare earth situation, because basically I think from what I understand, it's like weathered granite that has basically then become a clay. Yes, that has...
That's exactly right. So these ionic absorption clays sit above granites and often granitic intrusions, and the weathering has essentially leached out most of the deleterious elements, or at least has hopefully... leach test work pending, but hopefully liberated in some fashion lots of the rare earths, so it makes it easier to leach. And so what we have seen is we've seen an average of about 36 meters, I think it is, of intersection of the kaolinitic clays from surface down to basement, you know, down to hard rock or fresh rock. And that is where we have been assaying for yttrium using a handheld XRF, which we've been using as a proxy, because where we expect yttrium, we expect all the other rare earth elements. And so, you know, we're fairly confident there's a deposit there because of the handheld XRF results, because of the historical work that was done. And now it really comes down to A, the grades, and then B, the leachability of those ores. So it's been significant. It's not an exploration. It shouldn't be valued as an exploration project. It should be valued as something that is moving through feasibility. But the first major threshold in that feasibility is the leach test work. And so we hope to have an answer to that, you know, in the not too distant future, as soon as we get the results back and can send everything off to the labs.
Yeah, because this was the thing that attracted me, just because of the sheer lack of rare earths that are available outside of China. It's really quite scary how much of this particular asset or resource that China hold, and that makes it a critical element, obviously. And also the price per ton of this stuff can be huge. Obviously it depends whether you sell it as the clay, whether you go through the first processes with it and then sell it, or you take it right to the end. I think if you take it right to the end, it'd probably be a very complicated situation and very expensive. So unlikely that you will go that far. But give us an idea of the scales in terms of the prices that you can achieve for this stuff.
I don't have an up-to-date price deck on me, if I'm honest, Kevin. But the presentation that we put out some months ago, end of last year, gave, you know, the price deck that people have. If you're around the hard rock phase, you've got commodity price basket of around $45,000 a ton, and it goes all the way up to about $85,000-$90,000 a ton. You know, the value per ton is significant. And really what it comes down to with the economics is how well does it leach using what sort of infrastructure? You know, I don't think the CapEx numbers are crazy. And certainly something that I'm really excited about is seeing, you know, these MOUs signed with the UK and with Europe for Kazakhstan. James Cleverly was over here last week and signed an MOU for critical mineral supply from Kazakhstan to the UK. And Kazakhstan had already signed that with Europe. Now, Europe's only signed that with two parties, Kazakhstan and Namibia. And you only do that if, A, you know, the place has the political stability to operate with, and you can be assured of the supply chain and the credibility of that supply chain. And B, if you're convinced that the minerals are there. I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind at all that Kazakhstan has significant mineral wealth. You know, what we need to do now is take our projects to a stage that we can tap Europe and the UK on the shoulder and say, well, you guys have said that you want this. So now what does the funding package look like? And Europe have started to formulate that. And I'm still going through the details of that to try and understand, you know, what exactly it means. But they've started to basically say that funding a project, maybe don't quote me on this, I should read the release in more detail first, but my understanding of it is something along the lines of they'll fund a project in Kazakhstan right next to the fact that they'd fund a project in Germany or Finland or whatever the case may be to ensure that critical mineral supply. So that puts us, you know, right at the front of potential parties to be able to take this forward. So, you know, our job now, let's de-risk this. Let's demonstrate that this is economic, that these projects, both of them, the copper and the rare earths, are economically viable. And if we can do that, even at a scoping study level, I think we'll have no end of suitors to write checks to take these things forward. So that's our hope and that's our goal this year.
Yeah, I mean, 20,000 tons of $45,000 at the low end per ton is a significant amount of money. I'm not even going to do the maths, but it's a lot of money. Yeah, I mean, I think the upside potential for E-Star Resources is mind-boggling, literally. But as we've said already, and we said at the start, the market hasn't really got it that you have basically got copper and you basically have got rare earths. Now, the rare earths, we need to know you can leach them. If you can't leach them, then it's worthless, I presume. The copper is there, and we know that whole area has copper. And not only that, you've got another four targets and probably significantly more than that as well to go after to increase that. So, yeah, I think people need to wake up and realize, wow, this is an incredible opportunity.
I hope so. And I couldn't agree with you more. It's certainly how we feel. And it's, you know, just despite markets being, you know, a little bit slow at the moment, they turn around. We all know these things are cyclical. Every man and his dog knows that rare earths is a strategic and critical mineral that governments are starting to spend money on supply of. And you'd have to have your eyes shut and your ears closed not to realize that copper is in the headlines every other day for its potential undersupply. People are saying this year, but definitely from next year. And in Trafigura calling $12,000 a ton within the next, I think, 12 months. So, you know, I think we've got the right commodities. There's value very much sitting in the ground. And I think it's only a matter of time before E-Star, you know, really demonstrate that, and hopefully only a matter of time before we get rewarded for that in our share price.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for coming on. Say, Alex Walker, CEO of E-Star Resources. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Alex.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.